today on Family Talk.
Welcome to another edition of Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and today we will hear a unique story from Tom Bowen, one of the brave men who ran into the Twin Towers while they were still burning after that fateful day. Now, this is part two of our discipling program, and you have to stick around to the end to understand the connection he draws between search and rescue and discipleship. But I'll give you a hint. A fireman in a burning building relies on the fire hose to find his way through the chaos and return to safety. It's literally his lifeline. For Christians, Jesus is that lifeline, and discipleship keeps the believer connected to the living water. Well, I guess that's a bit more than a hint, isn't it? But trust me, you will still be moved by this powerful story. So let's jump right in.
We had two friends here in the studio yesterday, and only one of them got to talk. We're going to hear from the other one today. But Joe White is with us. He's been my friend for 30 years. I love this man like a brother. I'd like you to introduce our guest that you brought.
I'm sitting on the edge of my chair.
We had lunch together. This is a good man that people are really going to want to get to know, because this man is a hero.
A great American.
Yeah.
In the early part of the century, I was in Memphis doing one of those Promise Keeper events, and they told me they wanted me to meet somebody really special right before I spoke. And they had Tom Bowen as their special guest that night in the Pyramid in Memphis. And Tom was there with his son, Ben, who was being treated at St. Jude's Research Hospital. Ben had brain cancer. And Tom introduced himself and Ben to me. And Dr. Dobson, of all the men I've ever met, I don't know anybody that I respect more than Tom Bowen. He is a firefighter. He had a fire hose from 9/11 and explained to me it was his lifeline. I'm going to let you talk about that with him. But that became the theme that night, and now that's become the theme of our discipleship ministry, the lifeline of Tom Bowen.
Well, Tom, how many years were you a firefighter?
I served as a firefighter for about 5 years.
In New York?
No, in my home state of West Virginia. And then when the attacks happened in New York City on 9/11, I was called up to duty to help with the FEMA USAR teams.
And the fire was long out, and you were searching through debris. That was one of the assignments you had as a firefighter.
That's correct. You know, so we were initially called in to help with the search and rescue operations. And, you know, in those first couple of days, it became pretty clear very quickly that there wasn't anybody else to rescue. So our responsibility was to locate victims and do our very best to respectfully and reverently bring them home to their families.
How long were you out there?
I served off and on for weeks at a time from September through May of 2002.
We hear that the smoke and the debris and everything affected people physically. Is that for real? And are there many people who have succumbed to that experience, and have you suffered from it?
Yes. You know, it's hard to verbalize what you see when we rolled into New York City. Those first few days, the smoke and the fires, they burned for at least the first couple of months. Temperatures, you know, down deep in that pile were over 2,000 degrees. And so you had extraordinary flames that were unseen deep down in that pit. The smoke and all the material that had been crushed and melted and now burning was just vaporizing into the air.
Well, I'm learning things here, because I thought the fires were out, but actually they were not.
Oh, no, they burned for quite a while down deep. You got to realize, you know, you see the World Trade Center and that ground level, it still went down another 70 feet or so, where they had parking areas and shops and, of course, the subway and PATH station. So all of that debris just packed deep down into those large pits and, you know, created just an inferno.
I told you I was probably there at the time that you were
Yes, sir.
Working in the field down there and trying to rescue people. There was a ramp that had been built at one end that allowed us to look down on what was going on, and I was invited to be there. And well, you talk about an emotional scene, emotional moment for me. And yet you were down there right with the victims themselves. What did that do to you?
You know, in the moment, your mind is so wrapped around the idea of the job at hand, the task at hand, that I think to deal with the heaviness—
You had to shut it out.
You have to shut it out, absolutely. But there are points that I think everyone, all of us there, and anybody that's human, something small would trigger and break your heart or weigh heavy on your mind.
Did it make you angry?
Wow, this is going to be hard. You know, you, especially when you see what happened to the people, the victims there, and you realize that's a guy just like me and you, just like the folks listening right now. And they were minding their own business. They were doing their job. They were Americans doing what Americans do best. And without any provocation, they were killed in this most horrific way. And when you saw what happened to them, yes, you're angry. You're very angry. But again, tyranny of the urgent. And at the moment, the urgent was we had the most urgent and pressing matter was we've got to get these people home. We need to honor them, and we need to love their families by bringing these folks back to their families.
Talk about what being at Ground Zero did to you physically.
Well, physically, early on, about a month actually into the recovery effort, we were on a recovery where we found a number of firemen and civilians in a stairwell case. And it was a very moving time because we hadn't found anybody for a while. It had been several days, maybe even a week at that point. And to see these firemen and these civilians all together in this stairwell, you realize this was the great sacrifice right there in front of you. These people gave their lives to try to help these others. And so it was very moving. It was very difficult. During that particular recovery, I fell into that stairwell shaft, and it was a rough situation. It was a rough fall. I crushed my wrists and injured my back. And then over the months that kind of followed, the debris and the material in the air took a toll on my lungs. And most recently, in the last few years, had to have a large portion of my right lung removed. There are lesions they identified in my brain. And there are thousands of folks who are dealing with health-related issues because of the exposures there. You know, it's not the kind of thing when you go into that situation that you're expecting. But at the same time, you know, if we had to do it over again, we would go back because that's what's expected. That's what's required.
You don't say that lightly. You mean that. If
Absolutely.
You had to do it again, you would.
Absolutely.
What kind of guy are you to put yourself through that? What are you made out of that sent you into that horrific environment?
I think for me, I love people. I think the particular strengths and gifts that God has given me is to love people in that way. It's no better. I'm no more important than any other man who has gifts and talents that he's using for a kingdom business. It's just this just happens to be the tools that God's given me to work with.
But you are a believer in Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. And that is it's the baseline, the bottom line of the approach that I take. And, you know, going into Ground Zero, it wasn't just to recover people. It wasn't just to be there to aid with recovery efforts or cleanup efforts, but it was to where we could love on people and minister to folks and share Christ and share hope. Now, of course, I didn't go in there with a Bible beating people over the head and proselytizing, but it was through action. Through listening to their stories and identifying with their stories and finding a way to connect Christ with that story. That's where the ministry really takes place.
Let me tell our listeners a couple of things about this that stirs an emotion deep within me. The money to provide medical care and even I suppose, burial costs for those of you who went into Ground Zero and were affected by the fumes and all that took place. Many of them, like you, have lost a lung or a portion of one. And the money was about to run out this year, 2016. And the Congress had to reauthorize the money to take care of those people and didn't want to do it.
That's right.
That angered me because many of those Republicans and Democrats gave $500 million to Planned Parenthood this year.
That's right.
And yet they start this effort to save money with these firefighters who have paid such a price to try to rescue and to serve the families that have suffered so much. That doesn't seem right to me.
It's
and
not
you
right.
went in there and fought it and got right. the money restored along with other people, didn't you?
A lot of good men and women came together, and I worked very hard with them in pressuring and showing Congress the need for this. This isn't the place to pick the battle with fiscal responsibility. There are so many other arenas, Planned Parenthood, and the list goes on, where we could exercise more fiscal accountability or smarts, if you will, to pick this and to allow folks to gradually die off just because this is a financial battle we want to pick was absurd. Even here today, I mean, my voice is bad and my lungs are infected. Being in the studio was a challenge. We almost had to call it off. And the amount of debt.
You nearly canceled this
yes,
trip.
Absolutely. Because
you couldn't talk.
Correct. You know, and then the financial debt that we've already been put into it as a family to deal with these issues. This was just, it was an insult to injury. And as I shared, we've talked offline about this. I have to really work hard at not allowing that bitterness to harden my heart.
Yeah.
Because I know that even in this conversation about our health care or how I respond to that, there's an opportunity to show Jesus to those people around me who are hard-hearted and struggling to understand. And I can't be in the best position to do that if I'm angry about it.
Let's move on. You were several weeks ago involved in a march that was related to 9/11. Explain what it was.
Actually, yes, that was in May when we were able to bring several artifacts, if you will, from the World Trade Center disaster to my home state from New York City to be used in a permanent 9/11 memorial there.
And your home state?
Yes, sir.
Is what?
West Virginia.
Yes.
West Virginia. So it was an impressive display to see how Americans came out. And, you know, we talk about, you know, have we forgotten and where are people when it comes to things like 9/11? Is it just something that's a part of history now? But it was even with the political divisiveness and frustration and people pointing fingers at one another that's happening right now in our country. It was powerful to see us set that aside. And this was about a 14-hour long motorcade from New York City to Huntington, West Virginia. And all of the bridges and overpasses and long rest areas along the highways, you would see literally hundreds and in cases thousands of people lined on these bridges and overpasses with American flags waving them, with sheets that they spray painted, we will never forget, hanging down over the bridgeways. To see a family, I remember this one minivan off a rest area, it was real near the interstate, and there was a little grassy slope towards the highway. And when we came by, you saw the mom and dad propping their children up very quickly, and the dad helping the child put his hand over his heart. Just to see that, as I call it, the May 12th.
As you guys went by.
As we went by, right. And
yeah.
to see that September 12th sense of American pride and respect again, we haven't forgotten. I think sometimes we just need a little reminder. And I think having those pieces of the World Trade Center driving by brought us together, even if it was just for a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful.
How is New York different now than before 9/11?
Well, you know, New York is a very resilient place. And now if you go to Ground Zero, things have been built back up. And actually that part of Manhattan is bustling with activity and energy. They've done a great job, I think, memorializing and honoring that day with the museum and the memorial. But they've also done a great job not dwelling and focusing, but also growing the business and growing opportunities for people to get out. I notice they've got a great pathway, a walkway down by the Hudson, and it's nice to see people out.
Well, I'm going to be there this month, and so I'd like to go by again and see all that's happened there, because that is something we must not allow to be forgotten.
Absolutely.
We can't do it. 3,000 people. Think of how many people have been affected by the loss of a father or a son or a husband or a wife or a relative or a friend that died a horrendous death because of the wickedness of those who planned and deliberately brought that sadness to our country. I just appreciate you keeping it alive and what you did at the time of the tragedy and for months afterward, but what you continue to do today, as you just demonstrated. Now, you brought a lot of things that are sitting in front of me. I wish we had video today. There's so many important things. One is a folded flag like you would do in the military. That was given to you by whom?
Well, when we would do recovery work at the World Trade Center, when we would find a firefighter or a police officer, EMS member from New York that died in the line of duty, the whole site would come to a stop. Everything would come just still, absolutely still. And everyone knew at that moment that we had found one of their own. And as we would pull that person out of the rubble, they would be draped with an American flag, this being one of them. And we would respectfully and reverently pull and bring them out of there. We'd always pause and say a prayer. And on one particular recovery, the one where I was injured, one of the officers there with the fire department handed that to me. And I wish there was a way to convey that moment over the air, but it was one of the most powerful moments in the entire time I worked at the Trade Center. But he presented that flag to me.
He being whom?
One of the officers of the fire department there in New York.
I thought you were going to mention George W. Bush.
Well, and President Bush actually later came in and officially presented it to me. And, of course, we've got the case over there where he put it in a case for us and signed it and expressed his gratitude for the service there at the World Trade Center. But and a great honor to meet the president and have him express his gratitude.
Whatever people think of George W. Bush, and I knew him quite well, I still do, he was an honorable man. And I can still see him standing on top of a van saying, "We hear you. The whole world hears you."
Yes.
And he brought hope and resolve to the American people.
I remember that day. And then I remember about a week later him being, he was on the television and a few of us had taken a break from the pile. And we were at a little cafe called the Round the Clock Cafe. And New Yorkers had all gathered around the television set that was in that cafe and a few of us rescue workers. And when he spoke, there was just this deafening silence. And he gave that powerful, "We will not tire, we will not falter, we will not fail. We're going to find these folks." And you know, we knew it and we believed it. And I think at that time, that's the kind of leadership, that's the kind of leader that we needed.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of fear and a lot of wonder, what's going to happen next?
Well, we really didn't know if we were going to be hit again in a day or two.
So it was an honor to meet him and to hear from him. And, you know, a great man indeed.
There are many other things here. Joe, did some of this come from you?
Yeah, it's about the passion for America and men discipling men and women discipling women.
That's what you're heavily into.
Yes, sir.
We're really out of time, Joe.
Yeah.
We're going to have you back. But just summarize that in the briefest of terms.
Tom and I are excited about a new movement called Passion for America, Passion for the Nations, which will take us to up to 38 music festivals around the country with Michael W. Smith, Lecrae, Tadashi, the Crucifixion Drama. One, to lead prayerfully thousands of men and women and children to Christ, but more importantly, to begin a discipleship revolution for the United States of America. Our nation is starved for disciple-making, not just from the pastor and from the Sunday school teacher, but from just everyday laymen, laywomen in the church like Tom and I, who are all committed to going out and making disciples and making the Great Commission come true.
The Great Commission ends with that commandment, not just go into all the world and preach the gospel, but it ends by saying, and make disciples of them.
The most famous last words ever spoken were his words. He waited till after his death, after his resurrection, after everyone that knew him was positive that he was Lord and God, to say, now, you've got one job to do. Go out and make disciples of your children, of your friends that you work with in the marketplace, of your neighbors. And so for the last 6 years, we've been vetting out a discipleship curriculum that has been overwhelmingly, thrillingly successful with folks discipling folks. And now through Passion for America, we want to roll it out to the nation. It's all free. Thanks to Tom, it's called Lifeline, which is a concept Tom introduced me to with this souvenir that he carries with him, this fire hose that becomes the lifeline of the firefighter that gets him out of the fire. And our call to all men and women from around the nation, around the world, is to not just get your hands on the lifeline, which obviously is Jesus, not just shooting water out of the flames, but shooting living water to beat the flames of hell, but to get everyone you know onto that lifeline through disciple making.
And that's the passion of your heart.
Yes, sir. And that prayerfully will be the Passion for America story.
Our time is gone. Thank you for bringing Tom Bowen here to meet us and to meet our constituency. This has been very meaningful, Tom, and thank you for what you've done. Thank you for putting your life on the line. And even though you've paid a price for it physically, I know you feel the presence of the Lord in the memory of what you went there to do. And we honor you today.
Yeah, it was my honor. Thank you, sir.
Well, indeed, we honor Tom and all the first responders who risked their lives that day and every day. You've been listening to Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and we are so grateful you chose to spend a part of your day with us. If you have thoughts or comments about the broadcast, we would love to hear from you. You can connect with us today at drjamesdobson.org. While you're there, you can also learn more about the discipleship movement Joe and Tom are involved in. The name again is Passion for America, and it's being unveiled in a series of concerts around the country. We'll have links to their site as well so you can get involved. As you know, Family Talk is a listener-supported ministry, so if you are able to, we'd appreciate your support and contributions. Call us at 877-732-6825 or reach us via our website. The address again is drjamesdobson.org. Thank you for joining us today. God bless, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Who doesn't want to be encouraged to make their marriage stronger? Our new Family Talk iPhone app is designed especially to uplift your marriage in a way that makes it easy for both husbands and wives to find great resources. Loaded with articles, broadcasts, and videos, the new Family Talk app will provide you practical tips on making your marriage all it can be. The customized Family Talk app tailors content around where you are in life. Whether you're a husband, wife, dad, or mom, the Family Talk app will provide you with daily inspiration to strengthen your marriage and invest into the lives of your children. The app also allows you to set personal reminders around life's greatest priorities, your faith and family. Go to drjamesdobson.org/app. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org/app to download your free customized Family Talk app today. Hey, this is Dr. Meg Meeker calling all you pinners out there. Did you know that Family Talk has a Pinterest page? Well, it's true, and it's full of great resources, parenting tips, marriage advice, and good ideas for holiday crafts, recipes, and things to keep your family busy. Follow our boards and be inspired. We are pinning and repinning new things every day from Pinterest users such as yourself. Connect with us at pinterest.com/Dr. James Dobson. That's pinterest.com/Dr. James Dobson.